Okay, so we're going to learn Sefer Dvarim, the beginning Parsha Dvarim. And for those of you listening or not listening, you brought the wrong chumash. Oh, really? Can't help
it. Isn't it Bamidbar and Chislart?
No. Nice try. But it's been a challenging week, and it makes sense that it's what I don't know. Historically, we know this week is very challenging. So, it's challenging both personally and nationally. You know, it's challenging because, like, at Shabbat, we didn't know what happened, but you turn on the news on Motzei Shabbat. It's actually interesting. In Chutzlaritz, in America, they did know.
Yeah.
They knew.
Yeah.
They got the news.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But we didn't know, and then, you know, you go through this challenge. And it's no coincidence that, of course, it's surrounding the issue of the Beit HaMikdash. So if you were wondering, do we have what to mourn for in Korban Beit HaMikdash, the answer is obviously yes. And if you think that Har HaBayit is Biyadeinu, the answer is obviously no. And this is not a political comment at all. I don't fault the government at all. These are not things that are easily solved. And anyone who writes on Facebook that it is just foolish. You know, I'm looking at this obviously from a religious perspective, not a national perspective. I don't propose to have solutions to geopolitical problems. You know, but nonetheless, it's very fitting that we come to Sefer Dvarim, which is like we're on Shabbat Chazon. You know, this is the time. Like this is that you always like. It's not a coincidence that summertime is always the time that everybody gets anxious about what happens in this country. You know, and if between you and me, I don't know if Bibi would have made the same choice he made if we were in the middle of November. It just, the summertime, like.
Which choice
you
referring
to?
What?
Did we miss
it? To take off the magnometers to whatever. He capitulated.
Yeah, he did.
And the cameras.
And the cameras. The whole thing.
The cameras thing.
Because it's not a good time. I mean, he didn't decide for that, I imagine. I'd probably, like, but just summertime also. It's hot. People are more, restless.
They have free time.
Oh, the whole thing. Okay, but it's just religiously, any Jew will tell you, it's not a good time. You know, Chazal tell us, it's in the Shulchan Aruch. We don't do things like this.
He's totally secular, like he eats shellfish.
Can you bring me the Shulchan
Aruch? He will not.
He will not
like go to the doctor during the 3 weeks. He's afraid of getting bad news. He won't start new businesses.
What?
My completely secular boss.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
the only thing.
My completely secular patients won't go to the beach. They won't go in the water.
In three weeks.
And they'll tell me like the ocean is terrible this time of the year. You know, they all live on the beach. Don't go.
Right. So the Shulchan Aruch says. Okay.
Mishenichnas
Av mimaatim b'simcha. This is Siman Tav Kuf Nun Aleph. When Av begins, we minimize our joy. Ubar Yisrael di'id la dina b'hadei nachri. If a Jew has a din with a non-Jew, has a court case, lishtamit mine. Stop. Don't do it. Dira mazle.
His
mazal is bad.
Okay.
What? Why? I'm not familiar. I don't know.
It's
not a good time to get into fight. Like, so if we have a din with if that's true on a private level, achat kama v'kama on a national level, this is not the time. You know, and I don't know if BB was mitya'etz with his rav, but it's a known thing. You know, it's a known thing. So I don't fault him. I actually, nonetheless, it's appropriate. Like this is a Dvarim is a weird book. It's a very weird book because it doesn't like the story is over. I don't know if you noticed. You know, Tzalot told me that if you go to the end of Bamidbar, they're in Arvot Moab. Right, they're in the plains of Moab. The plains of Moab. When you go to Mitzpeh Yericho. But you see, you can go to Mitzpeh Yericho and you look down, you can see the whole Jordan Valley. They were in the plains of Moab. They're right there. So now we have a whole book of literally no action. It's all prose. It's all a book of warning. It's all a speech. It's a speech of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's all it is. One whole speech. So So the question that all the Mefarshim have, or many, many Mefarshim have, is what's the point of the book? What are we going to do? What did Moshe Rabbeinu want to accomplish with this Sefer? So we're going to do, let's say we have the Ramban, we're going to do the Ramban and his Akdama, but before we do the Akdama of the Ramban, I felt it appropriate. Here's the problem. I was going to scan this for you, but I ran out of time. Okay? So, but it's so beautiful. I don't know. Should I read it or not read it?
He
tells the story.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the introduction. What?
Just be patient.
Read it patiently?
No, I'm talking to you.
Okay, be patient. The introduction of the Abar Benel to Sefer Devarim, he decides to tell his history in his introduction. It's a little bit long, but it's this page. So I'm going to read it, and it's on the DOT website. People have phones. They could follow.
Oh, okay.
If anybody wants to.
Probably on Safari also.
No, it's not on Safari. I checked.
Listening.
You'll listen?
Yeah.
Okay, it's hard.
Whoever
it's hard and poetic.
It wouldn't be in a
regular.
No,
there's
no there's no Abar Benel in a regular Chumash.
There's no space for him in a regular.
Right, it's like, the way Abar Benel works is the following. Abar Benel was really like a, it was an analytical perush. So what he would do is he would take sugyot, he would take sections, and he asks like 30 questions on the section, and then gives his idea, and then gives, you know, and then explains why his idea explains all that. He writes in essays. So they always say that anybody who learns Abar Benel, it's like an entrance into Apikorsut. Why? Because you read it on a Friday night, you read his 30 questions, and you fall asleep, and then all you have the questions, you can never, you know, you never really get to his answers. So. Some days are like that. How could you have a phone call out there? I don't know. Can you hear anything? So the Abar Benel writes, Amar Hasar Hayashar. If you just have to listen, I'll do my best to translate because it's poetry, which is like brilliant. It's ridiculous how brilliant he was. Amar Hasar Hayashar Don Yitzchak Abar Benel Zatzal. We write Zatzal. Zeli Esrim Shana B'Yimei Bachurotai Bachuroti. 20 years. I was a young man. Biyoti al admati. I lived in my land. Ha'ir Lisbona. Ir ve'em b'malchut Portugal. He lived in Lisbon. Okay? The capital of Portugal. Asher b'kzei malchut Sfarad. The edge of Sfarad, of Spain. Mil'ani libi lish'ol she'ela gdola. My heart filled with me to ask a big question. Kolelet Sefer Erle Hadvarim Mishnah Torah. That included the book of Sefer Hadvarim, which is called Mishnah Torah. Right, you know that. Familiar? What's Mishnah Torah?
Deuteronomy,
the second Torah. Which is immediately asks the question, if it's the second Torah, why are there two Torah? Shouldn't there be one? Really interesting. Asher sam Moshe lifnei b'nei Yisrael. That Moshe placed before the Jewish people. Va'atna ota lefanai kol yodei dat v'lifnei kol yodei dat v'din. And he placed it before all who knew religion. V'chein gdolei chachmei ha'aretz yoshvi al madin. There's poetry, din, and all of those who know Yoshvei al Madin, they sit in judgment. He placed it before all of humanity, in a sense. V'holchei netivot hatovot, and those who walk the good. Did you find it? You following? Excellent. Okay, where was it on the DOT website? You search for DOT, Abar Benel Devarim. So if anybody else has a phone and wants to follow inside, good for you. V'rashei hayishivot, and they placed it before Rashei Yeshivot. He asked this question for all. He sent questions about how they looked at the Book of Devarim. Beitav v'nivo, each one in his way and his speech. V'chilo matku li rigvi nachalei nahare darkechem, darcham umachshavotehem, cham li bibikir bi. Okay, my heart became warm in my midst. Dibarti elibi sana kilecha. So I said to myself, pick up your vessels. Chotamcha uptilcha. Your seal, patil. Your, what's a patil? Your what? Kanap patil teche. Okay, your shiftecha mishantecha. Vitsuda litzayed vehetera she'ela hazot vaseli matamin. You get it, right? And tsuda litzayed means it's like Yitzchak said to Esav. Tsuda litzayed. To trap for me, a trap and bring me sweet things. I.e., I'm looking for the answers to my questions. Yachta v'yutamin. Together it will be beautiful. V'pirush ha-sefer hazeh. Ki et lasot l'Hashem v'tushura l'havi l'isha Elohim. I'm searching for answers to my questions to understand the beauty of this work. Ramban shel Nevi'im. This is Moshe Rabbeinu. Barachavat bi'ur mishnah Torato. When he expands on the Mishnah Torah, v'legalot l'chol adato, and to reveal to whole his whole community, amikato u'mistarto, its depth and its hiddenness, v'et yikar tiferet gidulato, and the beauty of his wonderness, yan ubiyan katza matza prishato, because he spoke in a hidden manner. Meaning what he said was, if you look at the book of Devarim, it raises a number of questions, very difficult questions. What did Moshe Rabbeinu want us to understand? I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu speaks, and it's prose, and it's a speech, but what was the essence? What did he want us to understand? What did he want us to teach us? Mishdara b'divrei ha-mefarshim yishanim v'gam chadashim. Okay. V'ka'asher itasakti b'melechat Hashem zot yamim achadim. When I immersed myself in this work of God for a few days, savati nidudim. I was forced to nidudim. Nidud means to move from place to place. Ki mitza'ani mitza'uni ha'imim. Because the fears found me. V'toldot hayamim, and the passage of time, i.e. the events of history. Kafatz alai rogez hazman. Rogez? The anger of time. V'rishto asher taman, and his hidden net captured me. Do you have it? Yashavot haman. I don't know what that means. Something about Yashavot haman. Yeah, I think it's Haman. Yeah, Haman. Mishamayim nilcham hagalgal v'ragzo alai hitgalgal. Okay, from the heavens, the turn, the galgal, the earth, like fought v'ragzo alai hitgalgal, and its anger came upon me. Lakachat et nafshi zamam. They wanted to kill me. Vayikach et kol kinyani ad tumam. So instead, I lost everything. I lost all my property. And I had to run away from the kingdom of Castile.
Spain.
Ki yagorti mivnei af achema. Yagorti means I couldn't deal with this, the anger and the rage.
You just put it in the historical context.
Go ahead.
Right,
yeah, go for it.
1492.
Right. Everybody like Abarbanel was. Yeah. What was his job in Spain? What was he?
He was an advisor to the king.
Exchequer, I believe.
So he obviously didn't see it coming. Like
who saw it coming? Nobody ever sees it coming.
No. I mean, he obviously had to run away
suddenly. Or they saw it coming. I mean, it wasn't good for the Jews, but they thought, you know, you always think it'll blow over, or this is as bad as it's going to get. What?
It's not going to happen to me.
Or I think they thought, I don't know. Who knows what they thought? Okay. Ki yagorti mi ubezeh safu tamuk min v'lahot kol sifri. I lost it. Everything I was trying to write. It seems that he was somewhere in the process of writing this devarim, his perush. And I lost everything. Ki achi ve'ami v'chol shcheini tzivivotai tzari. My brothers, my neighborhood, everyone around me, pain. Gam hem alu ba'u bebeiti ubebeit midrashi v'ikhu et yididut nafshi. They were in my Beit Midrash, and they took Yididut Nafshi, my beloved friends. Who knows? I don't know what he's talking about. V'gama asha'asiti ba'sefer hazeh nishbar o nishbar v'le'el yadi lo ba. I lost it. Like, whatever I was doing, I lost. V'lo re'iti v'adhena. I didn't see it until now. Achrei kan eser shanim. 10 years passed. V'yishkon Yisrael betach b'chol arzot sfarad hamonim hamonim. Right? The Jews are doing fine. Everybody, meaning there was some kind of—I don't know if it was 1492.
Maybe it was earlier. Must have been earlier.
Must have been some
kind
of
wave of
pogrom, wave of hatred. Like, I don't know if it's. I'm not up on my Christian history. Right.
Yeah. Maybe in the 1480s.
It's not so hard, difficult to imagine. They see come in waves. It happens.
1480s.
Shlevim v'shketim ochim l'ma'adanim. Okay. Everything's fine. Emunim malei tola ve'em mechalim. Blew over. Chashav Hashem liigalot b'rosh golim. Right? So God revealed himself as the Rosh Golim. The head, the chief, legalot, galut, gola, exiler. Et kol ha-yehudim gdolim b'tanim. This is 1492.
Yeah.
Okay? So Asher b'chol mechuzei Sfarad hayu chonim. They're getting rid of all the Jews in Spain. V'yad Hashem haygam Hashem haytabam lehumam ulabdam. To destroy them and to make them lost. Achrehem b'chol ever hashod v'hashever hara'a v'adever ubayam ubayabasha tichsemu busha. V'ra Hashem chadasha u'b'choser kol nafsham yibesha. You get it?
Bad stuff.
V'yashlichem el eretz acheret. And he sent them to another land. B'goy lo yishmu l'shono tzara'at mima'eret. Right? And into a nation that nobody understands, a place of tzara'at, of anguish and pain. B'yom hazeh v'ani b'toch ha'gola b'rov chalchala. I was also exiled. Bati lenapolish.
Napoli?
I don't know what that is. Napoli?
Yeah,
Italy. Ha'ir agdolad lemala. Gam sham lohunach lanu. They wouldn't let us stay. Ki shirak Hashem lizvuv melech tzarfat asher kulanu. I don't know what that means. Something about a king, Spain, a French king. V'yalu prashav al eretz v'yich b'shuha. Oh, so I guess some French king conquered at that time.
Yeah.
What?
They were always like in war.
Right.
So he conquered a part of Italy and Spain
also. Okay. Ubeshetef ketef meshaluba v'yivatuha. So then they conquered it and then they plundered the whole thing. Lo amad ish bifnehem v'am lo yecharadu ki kulam ardu b'malkah muzkenim kamu amdu ubagad bogdim bagdu v'chirabu abadim amitpartzim. ובמושב ליצים בראש כל חוצות וקמצים קמו לבלה נחלת השם בני ציון היקרים. So who obviously suffers when there's a war? The Jews. עניים ועשירים מלאים וחסירים חושך אורם וקדשים שם הוקו בסנברים צל מוות ולא סדרים ושממה כמהפכת זרים ישליו אוהלים משודדים. I'm just, I know it's Hebrew in heart. There's a poetry in there. It's a kina. He's writing a kina for the Jewish communities of Spain that were then moved. They ran away to somewhere else, and then they were destroyed again. Natnu lim shisa Yaakov vayuchlu et Yisrael b'chol peh vayitnu otam aniyim ruudim kiru'ei begadim. They were poor. They were rendered garments. Na'im benadim b'nehem u'b'notehem alchu shevi l'mishpachot u'la'avadim. Right? Their children were sold into slavery. Ish ha'yashar be'inav ya'aseh v'hayta adat Hashem ketzon asher ein lehem ro'eh. And the Jews were like sheep that had no ro'eh, had no shepherd. Rabim, this is fascinating. You see it? Are you with me? Whoever's with me, only one person is following. Rabim me'ami ha'aretz ha'miyahadim me'imat mot mipnei mardut chalfu torot. He said something really fascinating. Many people had become Jewish, who had converted. So in their fear, what did they do? They reverted back. Avru chok v'gam mehem shafku damam kemayim.
They also got killed.
And anyone, it's not just the Jews. It's the people that came close to the Jews. They were also punished and suffered.
You say that to a ger. When a ger, right before tefillah, one of the questions that you say, do you understand that now you're fine and soon you would be included in the persecutions of the Jews?
V'yoter mehena, more than that, nishpar libi mikirbi al yehudim hamirudim. Merud, chase, I think. Merit, I rebelled. I don't think it's rebelled. Ki nichnasu ba'aniyot anashim ve'anashim olalei tepuchim. They were put into boats. U'b'chol oniya ve'oniya hayta ta'oniya ve'oniya machru otam l'shaba'im.
They
sold them into
slavery.
V'amalachim na'asu kotsim kesuchim. And these boat, these boat drivers, these boat captains, the sailors were kotsim. They were thorns. They were terrible. V'rubam yatsu miklalei hadat u'b'shebi u'b'biza halchu nidachim. They lost their religion, they lost their nation, they lost everything. Lo yadam naga banu rechavim mechavei ganavim. It goes on and goes on and goes on and goes on and goes on. Okay.
Can you talk about that he was on a ship and that capsized?
Did he say this? I don't remember. I didn't get that far.
At some point he talks about that he was on a ship, maybe in a different hakdama. He capsized and he lost all of his work, and so he had to write it all over by heart.
One second. Okay. Ki rabot anchotai. He says, I, right? V'yetzah Hashem et ozni b'martzeah. God, like, he pierced my ear with a piercing. I mean, I'm a slave. L'tzei b'tocha ha'afecha holech v'noseah. V'nichnasi b'oniyah b'lev yam.
Meaning,
I got on a boat. B'chemat Hashem alai bati le'i karpo. I got to this island of Karpo. Anybody in it?
It's the south of it. Like,
what's the name of it now? Some island? Okay.
V'eshev
po. V'inei yikra Hashem Elokim lifnei ma she'asiti b'peirush ha'sefer hazeh. I remembered that I was in the middle of Sefer Dvarim. V'nafshi tzahala v'smecha echzike bo v'nashka lo. I don't know if he found his manuscript. That's hard to believe. V'tomar osif ana begadlo b'chilo kahena mibli lo ki me'at asher haya b'mif'alo. I'm going to add to it. I'm going to build on it. V'ata yischu tzalalim tzailim tzalalo v'ini misader b'shona asher v'ini b'perusho. And then he goes in and says, this is what I wanted to study the whole time. So it's worth translating, I think. But there's a, he writes in this Kina poetry about the destruction of the Jewish communities of Spain and Portugal. How everything, like, it's all poetry. Did he really happen when he was in the middle of Sefer Dvarim?
I mean, he understands. Who came from Eicha and
right.
From other parts.
Right, it's poetry. He understands the, it's interesting, by the way. So Tzuda Litzayit is a reference to, who did God tell to do it?
Esau.
Right, he didn't tell it to Yaakov. So it's worth studying. But this idea of the introduction being, it wasn't a coincidence. He knows what the week is. You know, he knows this week is Shabbat Chazon. And so it's relevant in Shabbat Chazon, before we study the Parsha of Mishnah Torah, we first have to have the introduction of, well, you know, what happened to the Jewish people? What happened to the people of Jews of Spain and Portugal? What happened to our whole community? And only then can we move to Sefer HaDvarim. And it's hard to follow, but it's worth reading. Turn to Ramban. Those of you who have Ramban, let's study the introduction of Ramban together. Everyone say it? See it? In the first Pirush of Ramban on Book of Dvarim. You have it? Ramban writes, HaSefer hazeh inyano yadua shehu mishnah Torah.
Of
course it's a Ramban.
Yeah, there is. Turn the page.
Next there, right there. Okay. It's worth the following inside. This Sefer, its idea is known, hu mishnah Torah. Mishnah Torah?
Second Torah.
Deuteronomy, that's the name? Mishnah Torah. Okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu calls it Mishnah Torah, by the way. So
more like a repetition of the Torah than a second.
You asked it, what's the question?
Like Lishanot. Why?
Why repeat it, and how can you have two Torahs? And more importantly, most importantly, who wrote this book?
Moshe.
What?
Oh, Hashem.
What? Exactly.
It's like a refresher.
It's a refresher, right.
Who needs that?
You need a refresher? Learn it the first time.
Second edition.
What? Second edition?
For those that couldn't remember the first time.
Yeah, but he puts
what?
It.
What?
I don't know. He puts it into a different perspective.
Maybe Mishnah is from Lashon.
Shinun. So what does Shinun mean?
To go over it, but to go over it so that you
remember this plot.
Internalize.
That's all fine and good, but why do I have to have the go over it? Why does the Moshe Rabbeinu say at the end of the Bamidbar, these are the end of the four books of Moses? Do us all a favor and read it again.
Sometimes in the retelling, you see different aspects of a story, and memory, what actually happens and what is remembered as having happened, are two different things.
Oh, that's definitely true. We find throughout the book, and from this parasha, we're not doing it, that the very first story, Moshe Rabbeinu tells the story a little differently than we remember it. And by the way, this is the springboard for the entire corpus of biblical criticism. Right? Biblical criticism. Biblical criticism says, what's biblical criticism? The whole yesod of biblical criticism is this is not a divine book. Right? You primitive religious Jews who believe this don't understand science and academia, right? But how could it be that you could have one cohesive book which says very different things?
So,
by the way, I will tell you, I believe in keeping my head in the sand regarding this whole area of biblical criticism. I don't study it. I don't know it. When people write articles about it, I don't read them. I know that sounds like...
I'm intellectually dishonest.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm quite comfortable in my intellectual dishonesty. I don't know how to engage in it. If somebody asks me about it, I'll say, I don't know. But I don't think that there is personally a benefit in reading things that I believe are kafira in order to teach myself why they're not kafira.
Well, I think it's called emuna.
But
isn't
it also
no, emuna
would be the opposite. Emuna would be saying, I can't read it, I'm strong enough.
Right.
I have faith that this is wrong.
Right, but isn't it a bit out of fashion anyway?
What?
It's kind of gone out of fashion, no biblical
criticism. I don't know, is it out of fashion?
Go study a master's degree in Tanakh and Bar-Ilan and tell them that it's out of fashion.
Right, right. But I...
It's definitely not out of fashion.
No.
Alive and well.
So, right, I mean, you have to... Whatever. So it's, there are many, many of the, like, modern day... It was very, very in vogue in the, like, 70s and 80s and whatever. It was on, especially from, it's in vogue for the entire 20th century. But, like, many of the modern pirushim or the goals of... it. Actually, there's a pirush of Shadal. There are pirushim that come later, that came later after that. Especially the works of, like... Not just Rabbi Dan, who's well aware of this, but Rabbi Yoel Ben Nun as well, right? Many of their whole perspective is to show you, no, this was written this way and this is written that way because of, you know, in direct response to. But the bottom line, I believe, is either you believe that Moshe Rabbeinu gave it to us and that it's Kol HaTorah is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or you don't. You know what I'm saying? So why do I need to learn all your proofs in order to understand why you don't learn all your proofs? I don't think there's a problem with saying, no, I don't know that. I just don't. You know what I'm saying? That's my perspective. I don't think it's worth always putting yourself in situations to ask questions in order to then, you know, because the questions are real questions. Right? So if you don't have the question, if you don't have a burning desire to know biblical criticism, then why start? Because it causes problems. That's just my perspective. I don't know. You could agree or disagree with me about that, but I just don't read about it. Anyway, says about Ramban. So this idea of Mishnah Torah, it itself raises questions. The whole new nature of two Torot, why do we need a second Torah? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu have the second Torah? What's his purpose? Is it really a second Torah? And of course, didn't, you know, if Moshe said it, did God say it? Where's it from? And if God said it, when Moshe Rabbeinu gave the speech, this is a very interesting question. Says Ramban, Yibu Arbo Moshe Rabbeinu Ledor HaNichnas Ba'aretz Rov Mitzrot HaTzvichot Yisrael. Right? In it are clarified the majority of mitzvot that Israel needs. V'lo yazkir bo davar mitarat kohanim. You don't find pretty much anything from Vayikra. Lo b'ma'aseh ha-korbanot, v'lo b'taharat ha-kohanim b'ma'asehem. Right? There's no how you bring the different sacrifices and how the kohanim become tahor. Shekvar bi'er lahem v'kohanim zrizim hem. The Kohanim, they know their job. So they don't even be told twice.
It's like
footnotes. What? It's like footnotes. But with Israel, he goes over these mitzvot. Pa'am lahosif behem bi'ur.
Pa'am,
no, I don't have pa'am achar pa'am.
I have your pa'am achar pa'am.
Interesting. Okay. To lozif behem biur, to add a clarification, upam shelo yachzir otan, not to review them, rak lahazhir et Yisrael berov hazharot, but rather to warn them.
To drive it home.
Well, to drive it home. Interestingly enough, there's an idea of that there are, sometimes the Gemara will say, why does this pasuk come up? Well, it says, to tell you that there's two Yisurim when you do this. Right. Right? How many Yisurim when you eat a bug?
Six.
Six, seven, eight, whatever. Why not one? Wouldn't one been enough? Don't eat bugs. I don't know. It's very bad. Don't eat bugs. Okay. Kamo shiavo b'sefer hazeh b'inei b'inyanei avodar zara azharot b'rubot zo achar zo b'tochecho. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't worship idols many times in the rebukes. V'kol pachadim asher yavchidotam b'chol onchei ha'averot. And the fear of punishment if a person violates these avodot. So what's the first reason that he says? What's the first reason number one? What's that? More elaborate explanation for what? For who?
Yisurim, for Bnei Yisrael.
For Am Yisrael, for the things that they need in order to function in society.
It sounds like the warnings, though, the negatives, not the positives, the negatives.
No, there are definitely positive mitzvot. Many, many, many positive mitzvot in Devarim. Okay.
Right, but so, but he, first, I actually think he, you, there are two things that he just presented. Sometimes he's presenting things to add an interpretation, and sometimes to, you know, in, and if it's adding
add
an interpretation,
nuance, nuance.
It might be right. But sometimes, I think this whole section is all negative, meaning he's saying that, that the mitzvot in Sefer Dvarim, different mitzvot are repeated for different reasons. Some of them are repeated to elaborate upon them, and
yes.
some of them are repeated to remind you not to do them. I think it's all lo ta'aseh he's talking here, only isurim in this these last few lines.
No,
ha-mitzvot
ha-no'agot behem. Those are positive also. Mitzvot ha-no'agot behem.
Where did you see?
Pa'am, I don't know if you have a different version. The first pa'am. Pa'am.
No, right, that's the first one. But then the second one is u'pa'amim.
Right, but that, he, and he's focusing
isurim,
specifically
is
which isurim, which ones? Which is it? Which specific ones, he says?
Avodah Zarah.
Right.
But I don't think he's saying sometimes in Sefer Dvarim it's to add explanation. I think he's saying the first time in the first four books it was to add explanation. It was to explain the mitzvah. And now it's to add an extra warning.
No, I don't think so.
I don't
think
so.
Av Yisrael yachzir mitzvot and no'agot bam. Yisrael, for, not for the Kohanim, for the Yisrael, Yachzir mitzvot, he's going back on. He's reviewing the mitzvot in Dvarim.
It says here Yachzir.
Sometimes.
No.
Why is the first time Lohosif Beor? Lohosif, to add.
Yeah.
I'm disagreeing with your reading.
Okay?
What? What's that?
I still have said.
Fair enough. That's fine. Oh, Yosef.
Not to go over them.
Right. They sometimes.
Not only go over them, but to warn them.
Yeah.
The Rov HaSarov. Now, if they're about to go in, the idea is that they, this is the group that is about to go into the land.
See, but according to your reading, the first one is, the first one in Bamidbar, according to your reading, the first one was Lehosif Behem Bi'ur.
Yeah.
How do you Lehosif Bi'ur to something you never learned?
You can't add it the first time.
Right.
I hear you, but I still think that it's
good
to
we'll agree to disagree.
To explain.
That's fine. That's fine. Oh, you'll see.
Right?
Let's
the
go
whole
on.
The question he's answering is why does he repeat it here?
Right.
So the answer has to be this is why he repeats it.
What I think he's saying is that there's no hard fast rules. It depends on what thing. Sometimes he repeats. Meaning there's we're gonna see here. Like first of all, does that make you happy? Okay. Why go over it? How can Moshe Rabbeinu go over it? Well, sometimes to explain, sometimes to elaborate, sometimes to warn. Why would you have to go over something? God said, don't worship idols. It's in the Ten Commandments.
No, people are people, and they do need to be told several
hot,
times.
And they're hot and tired.
They're hot and tired. No, they're not hot and tired. They're tired, but they're not hot.
the new generation.
V'od Yosef. Wait, he goes on. Let's read on. V'od Yosef b'sefer hazeh k'tzat mitzvot shelo nizkiru klal.
There's some new ones.
There are some new mitzvot here. Kagon ha-yibum, v'din ha-motzi shemra, yibum, right? Leveret marriage, motzi shemra. You know what motzi shemra is?
Saying something bad about
saying
something.
What? What's the motzi shemra?
Slander, lying about something.
No.
No, saying truth about something.
Motzi shemra is a specific, it's specific mitzvah. Anybody know what it is?
It's with the maraglim.
No, motzi shemra is when a person says, when a husband says, your daughter wasn't a virgin. That's motzi shemra.
Only that situation?
That's the din of motzi shemra. Yes. And he casts aspersions on the whole family's honor, right? And but he says it in such a way he proves that she wasn't
libel.
Just kill her.
That's what they do.
So it's libel.
Well, read it Dvarim Chabed. You're being sarcastic, but okay. V'hagirushin b'isha, divorce. Divorce is never mentioned before in the Torah. So if it wasn't for Dvarim, we wouldn't have divorce. That's an important thing. The Edim Zomimim, and Edim Zomimim are really interesting halacha,
yeah.
Right? Where you're negating previous Edim. Vizulatan, and there are others. Right. Ukvar ne'emar kul okay. Ukvar ne'emru lo kulan b'sinai o b'o mo'e b'shana rishona kodem raglim. Moshe Rabbeinu already received all of these mitzvot. Ki ba'arvot Moab lo nitchadshu lo eli divrei habrit. Because in Arvot Moab, right, they re-established a covenant, but there was no new mitzvot given. Right? The whole Torah was given to Moshe during the first year. It never says, God said to Moshe, go say this. Oh, Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem. Aval lo nichtivu ha-mitzvot b'sfarim ha-rishonim shidaber im yotzei Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu never wrote these down for the first generation. Why? Ki ulai lo nahagu b'otam mitzvot rak ba'aretz.
I like that ulai.
maybe they only could fulfill these mitzvot in the land. The same thing was true. Meaning, it's really fascinating. He says, it's not clear that the Jews fulfilled all the mitzvot in Midbar. So Moshe Rabbeinu, it never became relevant, like all the family and levirate marriages and divorces and, like, I guess nobody got divorced in the Midbar.
Why not? Because it's not something that connects to the land. Like, divorces are universal.
He says, even though they're not land-based
mitzvot.
Right. Who knows? He never told them. Like, divorce wasn't an issue at the time. How many generations were there? Two? Nobody got divorced? I don't know. It wasn't. I guess in the whole country, in the whole nation, nobody got divorced. They didn't have I don't know. He says it just wasn't relevant. Moshe Rabbeinu never told them, but he had all the mitzvot. It wasn't like Moshe Rabbeinu was initiating new mitzvot. Yeah. Sure, you had something to say.
No, I just was. I mean, it's sort of in line with the Ramban's whole tefisa mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael, right? That we like what you do in
oh, I like
kind
this.
Of practice.
What?
You know, what like when you practice. In Kutzlar's practice that the Torah was given to be observed here in Israel.
Totally agree. So it's interesting. I obviously love this whole thesis. Right. Yeah.
He says Shut HaRidvaz has big issues with this.
Everything okay?
Bye, Laura.
Yeah.
Bye.
She tried. Okay.
Bye.
Yeah.
Except the
only wait, one second.
So
yeah.
He says there are big problems with saying that because first of all there are mitzvot that are tluyot ba'aretz like Shemitah and Yovel that are written earlier or Shemitah
well Ma'aretz, earlier yeah.
that
yeah.
are written right. earlier and then plus he said how could you say that it's mitzvot she'inan tazirot? He said there are mitzvot tazirot that are written here that are very well
like
v'achalta v'savata and gerushin
like benching right nobody benched in the midbar right.
Yeah,
although, by the way, the mitzvah of benching, by the way, is much is very connected in the language of Birkat HaMazon. The land is very much connected to the idea of land.
Right.
You know, if you're being fed your food from the sky and it's all miraculous, either you're automatically connected or maybe you even take it for granted. Much more. You just assume that it's going to be there when you come every day. Yeah, it's very interesting. But it obviously feeds in, I mean... It's like very good for our religious Zionist ideology, like that religion as such has a certain meaning, whereas religion that's meant to build a nation has much deeper, broader, more significant implications. So, you know, is it possible to read that into the Ramban? I think absolutely, right? That, you know, he said that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't, like, what was the language that he used? No. Okay. Ulai lo nahagu ba'otam mitzvot rak ba'aretz. Meaning there were certain mitzvot that Moshe Rabbeinu felt they're not relevant or important or significant enough to impose them upon the people now, you know, before they get into the land.
I still like his ulai. I think it shows that he himself was not happy with his interpretation.
Right, right, obviously.
Or was happy with it, but not 100% certain.
Right. You know, but... It's something that intuitively we can identify with, that, like, there's a whole, it's just really, I was listening to this podcast, really, really fascinating. There's this guy named David Lichtenstein. He has this radio show in New York. He's like a Lakewood guy, Lakewood Shiba Lakewood, but really open-minded, really interesting. Johnny Solomon got me into this podcast. He shared it. It's called, what's it called?
Countercurrent.
I don't remember. Whatever. I'll tell you the podcast. I'll show you the link afterwards. So he has this discussion this week with Rav Moshe Navon. Rav Moshe Navon works in Mobilei. Okay? And Mobilei is now their programming algorithms. They were just bought by Intel for like $15 billion. Okay? And they're programming the algorithms that will guide the decisions made by, or the algorithms that will then guide automatic cars in the future. Right? At some point, we're not going to be allowed to drive. Why? Because we're terrible drivers. He said the statistic, 3,300 people are killed every day in auto accidents around the world. We're just terrible. It's crazy how we accept that, right? No, you don't think about it. What's that?
How many are in Israel?
No, I don't think it's more. I don't know if it's more or less. I have no idea. But what? Is it higher? Is it higher in Israel? I have no idea. He said, so they're now programming these cars. And when you program the cars, you have to make, like the cars have to make ethical decisions. There are always these famous ethical questions, like the trolley question. You know, you're running a trolley, and like the trolleys, there are five people on the track, and then there's an alternative track. And if you pull the lever, you're going to kill one person, but if you don't do anything, you're going to kill five people. Right? So you have to program these decisions in. What I found fascinating is that here we're like, so you have to use the Torah to make ethical decisions. There's a fascinating discussion of making ethical decisions to that will then influence the entire world. You know, these are not like, okay, in Galut, they're theoretical questions. You know, okay, like you have, but a country has to make these decisions. You know, a prime minister has to decide, is Ribonut on Har Habayit, in the theoretical sense, more important than riots in the streets in Amman and danger and our people literally being in life and death danger? So that, you know, like, as a community, mitzvot have a certain value. But when you take them and put them on the national scale, they're much, much, much more important, significant, meaningful. Like, you know, they have that much more nefach. So the Chazon Ish can write it. When the Chazon Ish wrote it, it was theoretical. But then when you know, in 1980, whatever, 1991, when Saddam Hussein is shooting Scud missiles and you have to decide, do I shoot it down with a Patriot missile that could, that the shrapnel could then fall and hurt people? Do I do that or not? You know, and I think the Ramban, he's sort of alluding to that. And Moshe Rabbeinu sense intuitively that these were mitzvot, I'll give it to them, like, to get them started in the Midbar. But now I'm not going to be there. They're going into Eretz Yisrael. We're at the end. I have to give them a speech. I got to give them the rest because it's much, much more significant. Yeah.
Something I'm thinking, not specifically the Ramban, but up until now, Moshe's been the leader, and they've been able to kind of be passive, kind of going along. If there's a child, ask Moshe, he'll guide them, whatever, rebuke them, whatever. Now they're about to go into Eretz Israel without Moshe, which is a whole new experience for them. They now have to take that responsibility, that he has to kind of almost implant himself in each one of their minds to kind of go in there with them.
Well, I'm going to come back to that in a second. Very interesting.
I heard Moshe on that on Monday.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. Hold on one second.
Can I just add one thing?
Yeah.
I was thinking exactly the same thing. And more than that, almost the opposite, like in the Midbar, where they were so connected to Hashem, they didn't need all of these mitzvot. It's not only that the land, you know, it's not that the land of Israel is more, it is more holy. It's not that the land of Israel is more holy and therefore the mitzvot are here. That one generation didn't necessarily need all of these daily reminders and daily connections and, right?
Because they lived it.
It was so evident that God was there, that they wanted meat and the meat arrived. They wanted water and they hit a rock and it came, like, it was so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going into a totally different existence. Not only that Moshe won't be with them as a leader to guide them, but also that their relationship with Hashem is changing from like a niglat kind of relationship to a little bit more of a...
Oh, undoubtedly.
...kind of relationship. And they need these structures to stay engaged in the relationship with God.
Totally agree. Well, I want to read with you. You don't have this song. So the Rabbi Benel, he summarizes what Ramban said. So I'll read you a summary because it's really good. Okay? He's a Rabbi Benel. Kavanah Rishonah Lochiach Et Ha'am. First intention of Moshe, we didn't do this one, is to rebuke the people, ulehazkir lehem avonotam, to remind them of their sins, kama yimru b'midbar, v'kama yitnehem b'midat harachamim.
That's the end.
That's the end, right? It's really interesting. The Ramban says, this is really... Well,
he says it first.
Ramban's, what? He says
it first.
The Ramban says that people shouldn't get, like, he didn't want the Jewish people to, like, give up and say, God always punishes us.
Yeah.
So what's the point? We're going to get into Israel and we're going to be destroyed.
Why even try?
So he says, no, that there's this midah of rachamim, that God is very forgiving. And that's always the opportunity for forgiveness, which is good for us. Kavanah she'enit lomar she'en li'Yisrael ha'mitzvot ha'mechudashot she'lo nichtebu b'svarim ha'kodmim. He says there are other mitzvot that were not written, okay, that Moshe Rabbeinu was told about them. And the third thing is to tell the Ba'ei Ha'aretz, la'azhir et Yisrael b'rov ha'azarot la'afchidam, to warn them, don't violate, especially Avodah Zarah. So those are the three reasons. Okay, first one, to tell them that God is forgiving. Two, to teach them new mitzvot. And the third one is to warn them not to violate Avodah Zarah. In his, so you see, like, his essays and essays, he goes into why I don't like the Ramban, blah, blah, blah. He says something really interesting. The Barbanel says, what?
You're welcome. I see you're using all my marks.
It was really great, right? No, I could have found it. Of course you could have found it. Okay. Okay. Do you remember? You read the whole thing, obviously.
Sure.
Yeah, okay.
I remember it.
It's yours.
I know.
Yeah.
Really
okay. He says something really interesting. He says, I believe that no new mitzvot were given in Sefer Dvarim. He says, oh, you find new mitzvot? He says, no, I can prove to you, you can find an allusion to every mitzvah in Dvarim in the first four books. The Moshe Rabbeinu did give the first four books in all Tariag mitzvot. He says, but, okay, you don't see it, I'll find you a word or two. And then he just elaborates on it later. Right? It's a really interesting theological thing. He says, there's no way, I can't believe that Moshe would teach new mitzvot in Sefer Dvarim. It's Mishnah Torah. It's a repetition. So in that way...
So is this a Barbanel?
This is a Barbanel.
So Ramban disagrees.
Also. Oh yeah, Ramban would disagree. But it's a subtle disagreement. It's a, meaning, is it actually a new mitzvah? Or no, Moshe Rabbeinu had given the mitzvah, but, you know, this is something new. Okay. In his introduction, the Netziv, well, now we're moving many, many, many years later. These are Spanish, both Spanish leaders that were both exiled from Spain, right? And they had a certain perspective. We're going to the Netziv. Netziv lived in Eastern Europe, you know, in the late 19th century. Okay? One second. Let me see if I can find. Here we go. Nir'e tam lezeh Hashem. Why is it called Mishnah Torah? Mashma'u pirush ubiyur ad shema'amid al digduk lashon ha-Torah. Right? It's explanation and pirush and biur, clarification, on digduk lashon ha-Torah, to be mekdakdek, on exactness in the language of the Torah. Umishum deklal zeh ha-sefer v'ikaro ba'al ha-hazhir al amel Torah. It comes to warn us on the amelut. Amelut means the
hard work,
the toil of understanding. Lefaresh dikduke hamikra, to understand the specifics of the language. Bezehu Talmud. And this is Talmud.
Torah
Shebaal Peh. V'chol ha-moser musar v'ribui dvarim hakol ba lezeh ha-tachlit. All the Moshe's musar is for this reason. Shikablu al atzmam ol ha-Talmud. That they'll accept upon themselves the burden, the yoke of Talmud. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, in going over and giving them exactness and clarification, is not just teaching them the specifics. He's teaching them an ethic. And I think you were, Nikki, you were alluding to this idea before, that Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to give up himself. I think that's what you were saying. But the Netziv learns it not in himself as a leader, but in himself as a teacher. That until now, if you had any questions, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu knew all the rules, knew all the, you know what I'm saying, all the evaluations, all the how you figure everything out, and then he would do it. He's gone. He's going to be gone. So how do you do that? So he says the way you do it, he taught us an ethic. He taught us a way of evaluating. He taught us a way of learning one thing from another. That's all in Sefer Dvarim. The comparison of text and the understanding, the nuance, that's all Talmud. Now, it wouldn't surprise us that an Eastern European rabbi in the 19th century would promote this idea of understanding the Talmud for two reasons. One, he was a Rosh Yeshiva. Two, what was happening in Eastern Europe in the late 19th century?
Haskalah.
Two things, Haskalah and?
Enlightenment.
Reform movement? No, and there's even one more.
Hasidut.
Who says what?
It's not the learning.
It's not the intellectual development. Remember, the Valajan, his yeshiva, it wasn't the Netziv, but Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, that yeshiva was the yeshiva from which sprang forth the entire world of Torah that we know today. What?
All yeshivot.
It's really fascinating. You can go back and look at it and see that was their hallmark. They brought in students in order to reinvent, reinvigorate. It's interesting that we see nowadays sort of history repeating itself. Like many people learn Gemara, but not, it's kind of waning. You see that there's a lowering, not in the Haredi yeshivot, although I wouldn't be shocked if it's happening there as well. But it's like...
A lack of interest.
Yeah.
Like it's not relevant.
Right. You see, like, people learn Daf Yomi. That's not Gemara, I have to tell you. Just understand, it's like, it's not Gemara at all. It's just covering material. Gemara is the toil.
So aren't people still doing that?
What?
That's what people do in Yeshivot.
I don't know.
Yes,
When I went to Yeshiva, so we learned Iyun in the morning, Bikiyut in the afternoon, and then something else Gemara in the evening. That was what it was. You know, and I was happy. I don't know. A little boring, but whatever.
You have
Musar. We had Musar. We had Tanakh. But that was like an hour or two, just to break the cycle until you go back and learn more Gemara. And that was the way Olam Yeshiva worked. Now, in Haredi Yeshiva, they do the same thing. But it's not easy. People think it's easy. Going to Yeshiva is really, really hard to get into that mindset and to really like it. And between you and me, it might not be for everybody. I'll take that back. It's not for everybody. I would say even more strongly, it's not for most people. And so Yeshivot realize this, because Yeshivot are for everyone, so you see a real strong resurgence of Chassidut. You're seeing it now, studying the writings of Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Nachman, much, much more popular. And that's fine, that's great. You know, we're learning to branch out. It's not a response, but it's one
you
versus
say
the
it's
other.
Fine, it's great.
And therefore,
that's
what?
Why we even think that.
Why? I didn't grow up with it.
Steve did not think it was great at all. He thought it was fluff. Right. He thought it was more than fluff. He thought it was even kefira.
And then Steve thought it was kefira?
He bordering on the Hasidim could stand on their head in front of the Aron and say that this is Avodat Hashem and it's just as legitimate as your sitting and learning Gemara for Avodat Hashem. Yeah, he wasn't into that.
Yeah, except there's a difference. Today, the default is Gemara, and Yeshivot are bringing in the Chassidut. Whereas in the Netziv's time, he started the Yeshiva. How many people were learning Gemara in his time? How many people learned in Balazhin at any given time? 100? At the most? How many people learned in Balazhin at the time? How big was the Yeshiva? It certainly wasn't Mir today. It wasn't even Torah Chaim. Very, very few.
It was very
people.
Hard to get in, though, wasn't it? People didn't want to come.
I don't know.
No, a lot of them knew that they weren't
on
what?
That level.
A lot of them knew that they weren't on that level. That they.
And they didn't come. I don't know. It's hard to know.
Chassidut came to fill a vacuum.
Chassidut came to fill a vacuum of, but much earlier, of Yi'ush. Right.
Yeah.
Correct. So it's just interesting. I'm sure. And I'm sure if I knew enough about Torah Chassidut, and then we asked this question, so some Chassidish Rebbe would come along and say that Moshe Rabbeinu gave us Mishnah Torah to instill in us the Hitlavus HaTorah, right? Because it's open enough. So we learn. So we've studied now for almost an hour this idea. But we studied first of all the story of the Abarbanel, because that's appropriate for our time. Then we delved into the questions that surround why did Moshe Rabbeinu feel the need to repeat himself. So we have a few basic ideas. He needed to repeat himself to instill in them. By the way, there's one more that they don't mention. That Moshe Rabbeinu says over and over again to me. If you can look at it, he says over and over again. It starts in Devarim, but he says Al tira ve'al techad. Don't fear, don't fear. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you. To instill us a sense of emuna, of faith that when we function with God's help. That it's incumbent upon us, but God will help us. And he says it over and over and over again. You see, even here, you mention in Devarim as you read it, Sichon and Og, and we beat them, and then we'll beat the people over there. Don't make the same mistake as the Meraglim. He's afraid, but confident that they shouldn't make the same mistake again. So that's one. We learned the idea of the repetition of the mitzvot. Some of them, according to Ramban, were new. According to Abarbanel, none were new. there's elaboration, and then we finally learn the Netziv, that the Netziv side as a reinvigoration of the idea of extrapolating the Torah, of learning something, and the ethic of the study in the Torah. All right, we'll stop here.